As you know, the purpose of the meeting today was to just preliminary remarks and consultants that we have hired. Mr. Johnson is here. You should have a copy of the report. Might just be afforded about 5 minutes of time for each of the members to look at it very quickly prior to your commencement. Apologize for the delay, but this is the best way to plan dollars for a trade. Every senator has conflict today.
Or that is totally what it does. No, you don't have an inferiority complex. You really aren't good.
easing of prohibition on crude sales to Japan, and or more sympathetic federal regulatory treatment of North Slope royalty oil. Now, I'll pause here for a moment and comment that none of these things are items that are not being mentioned currently in the press or things that have not already happened at least once in the last 3 or 4 years. They all fit into that category. They're not imaginings of things that, let's get away from scenarios. I commented earlier to some of the folks that I don't like that word. These things have happened. The embargoes happened in 73, and they can certainly happen again.
Would you care to put some kind of interpretation as to how you would view 125? As to whether one or the other might be more likely to happen. In other words, you talk about...
I guess I'm not quite enough politician to deal with what OPEC and the embargo thing might amount to. I don't believe I'd really try to rate those. I feel that on a scale of 1 to 10 that there might be about a chance of 2 that the president might for a time put a fee on foreign crude. That certainly is a political animal and no one knows what really will happen, but it certainly is something that he's entitled to do if that's the way he chooses to play the game. I would rate the easing of prohibition on crude sales, or really I mean exchanges. I don't really mean outright sales of crude to Japan. I would rate that rather high as a possibility because it makes so much sense. Of course, maybe that's a good argument against it, given some of the political climate that we have in Washington these days. But I'd say that would have a fair chance of happening. I personally would add that I think it might have a better chance of happening as it pertains to royalty oil than it might have of happening with respect to North Slope production in general.
Even given the glut on the West Coast?
Well, of course, the glut on the West Coast is why some relief should be given.
That's not royalty oil that's doing that.
No, it's only that portion that is royalty oil that's contributing. As to the more sympathetic federal regulatory treatment of North Slope oil, I think there's a fair chance that's going to happen. But let's go on to the next succeeder, the second succeeding paragraph, because we'll get into that a little bit more there. The second possible manner in which Alpetco might utilize pre-operation purchases of crude could be a time trade arrangement with producers under time trade arrangement with producers under which Alpetco would sell crude back to North Slope producers currently in exchange for the right to buy similar quantities from the producers at a later date when it needs crude for actual plant operation. This appears less likely, however, than the resale of crude for profit by Alpetco. That is the crude that it takes prior to plant operation. With respect to market changes, and this is a further reference, Senator, to that second preceding paragraph. With respect to market changes improving Alaska's in-kind profit potential, it will be argued that such changes would also affect the in-value price, thus increasing the price paid by Alpetco. This argument is valid unless such changes result in regulatory, transportation, or foreign exchange provisions that affect only royalty oil, in which case in-value prices might not be affected. This would suggest some successful legal or political effort by Alaska to improve the present disappointing price for its own North Slope crude. The issue of Alpetco's right under the contract to purchase crude prior to plant completion appears to have significant potential benefit to Alpetco but such benefit seems to be essentially unrelated to the successful promotion, construction, and operation of the petrochemical facility. From Alaska's standpoint, the possibility of being obligated to sell royalty oil without total assurance of the benefits calculated for successful plant operation would appear to be an indirect subsidy to the project and could very well result in lower long-term netback to the state from its royalty oil sales. I believe that the concept of Alaska furnishing royalty oil to supply a plant such as Alpetco's is solid, but only if the plant is one that could be financed and built based on its own economics, with the state agreeing to furnish the crude at competitive prices to supply the plant, beginning with its completion and commencement of operation. I'm still troubled by the lack of precise definition of commit and commitment as used in the contract, especially in Alpetco's benchmark requirements in paragraph 10.2. Again, Mr. Honig's letter of May 8, 1978 is somewhat reassuring in its statement that Alpetco's intended meaning of commit to expend means contractually binding agreements, contracts, and purchase orders. My remaining concern, however, is that in practice such agreements, contracts, and purchase orders are conditional and subject to change or cancellation. Since the dedication of so much of Alaska's future production hinges on interpretation of the one word commit, the legislature must at least assure itself of a firm and narrow interpretation by the commissioner with respect to all benchmark requirements. There are a few technical concerns that I feel need comment. These are of less significance but should be considered. The contract never states how much of the state's royalty oil will be utilized in the plant. Generally, the inference seems to be that if the plant is built, then it will process all of the royalty oil purchased. However, paragraph 4.3 is in direct conflict with that concept in that it provides in part, if buyer does not use the royalty oil sold and delivered hereunder, or traded or exchanged oil in the petrochemical facility, end quote. Indeed, if the buyer does not use royalty oil or traded or exchanged oil, then what might he use and with what effect on the state? Paragraph 2.0 provides that seller shall have the right to use the remaining 15% of its crude in any way that it wishes. But paragraph 8.3 provides that the state will sell minimum quantities of oil in value in order to provide for contract price determination. These two provisions contradict one another, and they raise the more important question. How little crude can the state sell in value and thereby receive an accurate in value price in the contract? Are there restrictions on the minimum? And what by that I mean, are there restrictions in the relationship with the producer under which the state must take at least so much oil, or are there compelling reasons why a considerable amount of oil must continue to be sold in value in order to determine what the price should be under the Alpetco contract? I don't know the answers to these. I certainly have not looked at the leases, but I think it's something that needs some consideration. Paragraph 12.1. In providing for security interest credit protection for the state, I am compelled to comment that the procedures thereunder will turn out to be extremely complex. As a crude seller, I would have much preferred the bond or letter of credit concept. Additionally, is the $50 million capital and surplus provision adequate for a bank to issue a letter of credit, say, for 60 days runs at 150,000 barrels a day at $6 per barrel? Last, paragraph 15.2, force majeure. Item 9 provides that inability to obtain federal, state, or other government permits or licenses shall be regarded as a force majeure, and could hold the contract in limbo for up to 4 years. Longer if state permits are the force majeure item. Presumably, Alpetco could be receiving royalty oil during any such delay. In closing, I should like to state very clearly that I would like to see the Alpeco project proceed for Alaska's benefit. My expressions of concern herein are genuine and the result of my best effort to evaluate the contract as I see it from a crude oil marketing standpoint. Time for study and preparation has been short and the subject is certainly complex. I shall be happy to answer questions directly or indirectly related to my testimony today, either now or later in writing.
The bottom of the page says, I cannot recommend the dedication of Alaska's royalty barrel to the proposed plant until unless the plant is completed. And continuing to say that maybe absent some strategy that you had not contemplated, and though you've been in the marketing of crude oil, it makes me wonder if you've been in marketing with the responsibility of developing a market. And what I'm referring to is anytime you want to go out to sell something, and in this case the petrochemical byproduct, seems to me that one option that might be considered that wasn't mentioned here is that you'd want to begin to build up a market for that, and you might want to trade some of that crude oil to somebody or commit some of it so that you could obtain some end item products from other petrochemical outlets in an effort to establish your market. It'd be difficult, it seems to me, to come on stream with a plant and start a marketing facility without having done or laid some of that sort of groundwork. You might want to comment on that.
Yes, I agree that it'd be very difficult to just one day
right.
establish a contract where you're going to sell 150,000 barrels a day or 120,000 barrels a day of petrochemical products. However, I don't quite follow the logic of buying crude oil so that you can trade crude oil so that you can acquire petrochemical products when crude oil is in an essential condition of oversupply and anybody can buy crude oil that wants to in today's market of comparable quality. And the petrochemical marketplace is in essentially the same shape, and if you have dollars to buy crude oil, I would think that what you would want to do is buy petrochemical products so that you could put them into your marketing operations and develop the market accordingly.
Well, that
I don't see the essential merit of trading crude oil. If you now, Senator, if you own crude oil, let's change hats here a little bit. If the state of Alaska were interested in building for itself a petrochemical plant and it had crude oil, and it didn't have to go to the marketplace with money and buy crude oil in order to exchange, then I would say that the exchange concept was a very, very valid, very special.
Okay, or to use your own arguments on page 3 and 4, if any of those things happen, some of which you say are likely, it might indeed tighten the market and conceivably might be difficult to buy crude. And in that instance, an assured supply would be a very desirable option, would it not?
Yes.
And in that case, my argument would make some sense.
Yes, but in that case, you realize, Senator, that my point is that in that case, the state of Alaska would then have created an indirect subsidy for this project, because in that event, the state would have been in a position to capitalize on its own resource and derive the greater benefit from the crude oil, and instead it would have optioned it out to Alpeco and forfeited that right to make the greater profit.
Well, conceivably, but the other side of that argument might be that we've already decided that we want to risk or take that risk in returns for higher profit dollars, maybe in the terms of generating the plant. And if that's one of, you know, that's the likelihood that we could consider at that time, but that seems to me that one or the other, either we bet on the come, one way we take the possibility that we might get more of our crude and just be a crude oil seller, or the other might be that we have a petrochemical facility.
Senator, I'd like to comment.
you're in a game of hardball. This isn't sandlot beanbag game. It's a real game of big money concern. And I think I'm probably very relieved that the decision, based on everybody's recommendation, is not mine, it's yours. I point out things for your consideration. I believe there are valid points to be considered, but certainly the consideration is yours. It is the Senate, it is the legislature, the administration, and I think I would have done this if I had believed that the Alpesco project was a stupid thing for Alaska to get into. I would have said that up front and not have very much more to say at this point.
Yeah, I understand.
And I see your point that you might, as a matter of fact, I believe it was in my earlier presentation, which I've edited, I said that the forfeiture of potential in-kind profits may be something that you are perfectly willing to do in order to make this project succeed, but you certainly need to consider that that is what you're doing, if that's the way that it turns out to be.
Yeah, it seems to me that but we are at a crossroads, and the decision to make is whether, if the petrochemical facility survives, that brings to the state some benefit. And we weigh the possibility of that happening and the benefits that it creates against those dollars which we would make simply if we stayed only in the crude oil business. And it was my understanding that we had essentially, through the Royalty Oil Board, had made that decision or essentially a commitment to consider going in the direction of a petrochemical facility. And to debate what the possibilities or the options might be regarding the royalty oil, being in the royalty oil business 3 years from now, 5 years from now, might be a change in midstream in the direction. In other words, we might be turning around saying, "Well, we don't want to risk going into the petrochemical business because crude oil fields might improve down the line."
Senator, I think we're both fortunate in that I don't understand all of the background for the creation of the Alpesco contract that has been approved by the administration, been submitted to the legislature. My comments in this report and throughout are comments that are based on what I have seen, the evidence at hand, and only further ammunition on which I hope you can benefit, from which I hope you can benefit and make a decision.
Okay, good. And let me refer back to some figures that you quoted as a royalty oil or someone who has marketed crude oil. On page 2, talking there about the royalty oil being delivered $12.40 a barrel, and with the West Coast spot market, what's the spot market at $13 a barrel?
At the price at which I could buy a cargo of crude on the West Coast, more or less at will today, and that's what my investigations of the current marketplace as lately as 3 days ago indicated to me that $13 was a pretty good hard number for what barrels are going for.
Okay.
In the spot market.
All right.
And the spot market is other than a contract market. This is a tanker of crude that you or I or a refiner might buy from somebody who's willing to sell.
Okay. Are you aware of what Alaska's royalty oil price is today? What's Alaska getting from there?
I don't know. I'm not able to say what Alaska is receiving. I'm looking. I have in my briefcase a copy of Ohio's March 1978 report. I know what those figures revealed. I have not looked at any of those. I felt the prudent thing for me to do at this point was to look at the market price. What crude's available for, and back off, I know what the transportation rates are, and I know that if you can buy or sell a tanker load of crude oil at Los Angeles today for $13 and it costs 90 cents to get it there,
The numbers back to the lease, which I find very distressing when I look at them, are not quite that much to the point in the comparison that I was going.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the top of page three, you indicate that Alaska Royalty Oil in value would be reduced as a result of this. And I'm wondering if there's a $13 market or price available. I'm sort of curious why Alaska isn't getting that. And I'm wondering if you can comment or tell me why we aren't getting $13 a barrel, if that's the market, if that's the market value or market price.
No, sir, I don't think I can. I know a good deal of the geometry involved here, but you're talking about getting it at the lease, in value at the lease?
Well, apparently we have an option to take it in kind or in value. And it seems to me that if $13 was a barrel, I'm wondering why we aren't selling it at $13 a barrel and making more dollars.
Good question. I might ask the same one. I don't know. But I am convinced that the crude that is being sold in the West Coast marketplace is being sold at the spot cargoes. Now there is one of the points that we might ponder for a moment. There is definitely a difference between spot price for crude and long-term contract price, and this may be a part of the difference that you're addressing.
Well, 60 cents a barrel has 150,000 barrels a day, a lot of dollars every day. And it's next, as a matter of fact, it's more than we get paid a year.
I hope, Senator, that you'll understand that this is an extremely simplistic set of numbers that was intended to demonstrate a point rather than to be used as a measurement of are you or are you not presently getting enough, getting as many dollars as you should get for your freedom.
But even in their simplistic form, are you saying they're accurate at making your point, though?
I think so.
Because the bottom line is, if these are simplistic and not realistic, then of course it's not one of the considerations that we ought to take seriously, because there'd be no profit or significant profit.
Well, I believe they're realistic. I believe they're simply not perhaps precise. We've got the demonstration of a rather wide potential for discounting and or profitability.
Okay, if you were advising the state in another area, let's say, as to whether to not consider, let's say that we had a market, our 150,000 barrels a day available to us.
Right.
And you were going to be our crude oil broker. Would you advise the state to take its crude oil in kind and market it through an independent brokerage?
No, sir, I wouldn't advise that as a single step. I certainly think the state is probably very wise in doing exactly what it's doing at the present time, that is marketing the crude in value.
Okay.
However, I think that there is a considerable possibility that, absent all of the other considerations that you have before you now, and Lord knows they're complex enough, I think there is a considerable possibility that the state might, over a period of time, take smaller quantities, not all of it comes to 50,000 barrels a day, and try in-kind marketing through a broker or a representative or a state marketing facility. I don't make a representation one way or the other about how it should be done. But if that were the case, if the state were going to take some such step as that, I would certainly think that a parallel approach to trying to make a few of the things happen that I had mentioned in this would also be in order in the state department.
Right, but you said you would not recommend the state take its royalty oil in time.
No.
Okay, and if you were saying consultant recommending to Alpetco, would you recommend Alpetco then market its the same 150,000 barrels.
I don't think I'm in a position to answer that.
Yeah, thank you. That's all. The same 150,000 barrels.
I don't think I'm in a position to answer that.
Yeah, thank you. That's all.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, on page 3 of your comments, Mr. Johnson, at the top of the page, you indicate that you find reassuring the assurances from Mr. Honig and the governor that Alpetco would not take their crude before the 25th month. How reassuring do you find that?
Reassuring. About 8 or 9 months reassuring.
Is it?
Because I was visualizing that they might be planning to take it a little bit earlier than that.
Is it customary that contracts of this magnitude might be modified by letters of intent? Would they then become an integral part of that contract?
All I really know about that, Senator, is what I read about the Panama Canal Treaty, and I'm not sure how that finally came out.
I'm not sure by that.
I'm not an attorney. I can't say, and certainly if I'd had the experience in Oklahoma or Texas, I would not try to apply it in Alaska as to whether a letter of intent would become binding on parties to the contract. I don't know. That to me is a local legal question. I have no answer.
Johnson, I have a couple. I'd like to explore the area that Senator Sumner touched on a little deeper. Just using, as you said, a generalization of those numbers. The price change, if I could paraphrase what I interpreted from what you said, would occur in that they would change the spot value of it, which then in turn would depress the entire market.
Yes, sir. If I entered the Gulf Coast or the West Coast marketplace, let's take this out of the context of North Slope crude oil, and remember that gluts and surpluses and shortages are usually in a commodity marketplace a function only of a tiny percentage of the total volume of the commodity being traded. A small volume can have a gross effect on whether a product is in short supply or in oversupply. And what I'm suggesting is that if I were a foreign crude broker and I came to the Gulf Coast, I had a particular reason for wanting to do so, and I had a relatively low cost in the crude, and offered Orienta crude, which is presently going in the spot market at $13.10 or thereabouts on the Gulf Coast. If I offered it at $12.95, that would very quickly become the market that everyone would be considering on Orienta crude. The other guy who has it that's still trying to get $12.10 would be faced with potential buyers whipsawing him and saying, "What do you mean $13.10? I've got an offer $12.95. Now, this kind of affects cycles. It doesn't, you know, it only lasts for as long as such offers are being made, and then it returns to equilibrium, but then it cycles back down again if there's discounted crude being offered in the market.
Okay, but if I might interrupt. Right at that point there, is it common or uncommon for the contractual sale to have a fixed per barrel cost?
Common.
It's common that they do have a fixed per barrel cost. So then how big is the spot market versus the contractual market?
in the case we're talking about, Senator, I can't answer the question. I can't make a responsive answer to what the relative markets are. As a matter of fact, North Slope crude is in that position that almost every new crude in the spectrum finds itself at the outset. It has lots of problems for refiners because refiners are sensitive. They're like all the rest of us. They're resistant to change. I think some of the difficulties in which North Slope crude finds itself now will be relieved and ameliorated after a few more refiners try a few 100,000 barrels a day to find out just how serious the apparent difficulties are going to be. So I really don't know the size of the spot market. All I know is that the spot market exists and that cargoes are being sold in the spot market on both the Gulf and the West Coast. Interestingly enough, as nearly as I can determine, the spot market for a barrel of North Slope crude is almost identical at the present time on the Gulf Coast and the West Coast. $13 number is, from what I've been able to understand, $13 number is about the current number.
Okay,
I'm just going to press.
But if I might, just one more follow up on that, then. The way I understood what you just said is it's common practice for the contractual sales to be on a fixed dollar value. And could I interpret then that that would be common practice if the state fixed an in value price for a long period of time on its North Slope oil instead of that being sold to El Petro instead of the floating market?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Senator.
Tell me again what you...
If the majors produce it,
yes,
sell theirs for a fixed per barrel cost on a long-term contract.
At destination.
At destination. Couldn't we do likewise with ours? At a fixed cost instead of just deriving the in value price? Because what's happened to us here right now, we just handle a couple of contracts and we're renegotiating based upon the probable passage of the El Petro contract because that wellhead per barrel price was less. And yet a year ago, these people were not these people being the other entities, not an El Petro, entered into the purchase of Alaskan crude for the wellhead price at that time. But, you know, what I'm asking is that...
I think before I respond to that question, I'd like some time to ponder it. That's kind of a hairy question. It's one that I can see certainly with concern.
Well, it certainly would eliminate any fears of a decrease in wellhead price on the West Coast. But
you mean a decrease in the delivered price?
Right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, in connection with that, though, and maybe I'm confused here, but if El Petco were to sell their crude before the plant went into operation on the West Coast, then that would increase the glut on the West Coast, and then the other oil would have to go.
Yes, I think, Senator, I would change that terminology a little bit. I don't think anything's really going to increase the glut on the West Coast. I think that the West Coast is going to absorb as much crude as it conceivably can absorb, and efforts to sell this barrel on the West Coast will have to, that are successful, will have to displace another barrel that's currently being sold on the West Coast. The effect is the same as what you're saying. I don't even submit, it says so right here in the presentation,
I'm not so sure that a single additional barrel of Alaskan royalty oil might even be sold under that set of conditions on the West Coast. But I think the effect on the market might very well be the same as if it had been sold. You see what I'm saying? That the offering, the serious offering of a barrel at less than the going rate has the same effect in the marketplace on the price and on a temporary sort of a frame of reference as if the barrel had actually been sold.
Well, what I actually was thinking of was even if it sold on the West Coast for the same price, it would mean more had to go the lower route and the wellhead price on that oil would be less.
That's right. Yes. That's right.
Therefore, the tax can stay the last one.
I wish, Senator, that I could answer your question more forthrightly, but I'm skittish about trying to address the issue of what might happen. I wanted very much to keep this commentary straightforwardly on the Alpetco issue. As the contract is written, and what observations, what things I think that the committee and the Senate should consider prior to this final decision on the contract.
Bill? Okay, I just have to keep pressing in this one area. You wouldn't, while these are possibilities, and like Senator Poland said, that is a possibility. If Alpetco went and sold 150,000 barrels a day in Los Angeles or the San Pedro area, that means 150,000 or some ratio of that would go around to the Gulf Coast, and that would back up and lower the wellhead price. Okay, but the possibility of selling that on the West Coast sounds like it's remote, because you'd indicated before you wouldn't advise the state to take over and try to market its 150,000 barrels, because conceivably, if you took it, you might have to take it around to the Gulf Coast. So these are not, the probabilities are not great that there is a market on the West Coast for the royalty oil sufficient to encourage someone to aggressively seek just the brokering or the marketing of that oil, is my understanding. And what I'm asking you is, do you essentially concur with that?
Yes, may I put my own language on this? I would not presume for a moment that if Alpetco were going to exercise its option to take crude prior to commencement of operations, that it would elect to take 150,000 barrels a day of North Slope crude oil on day one and start trying to market on the West Coast. I don't think, as I answered your question before, relative to what would Alaska do if it were going to market in county. I would expect that an effort would be made on a much smaller quantity. The contract says that they may take the smaller quantities, 1,000 barrels a day. I would expect that the effort would be made with a much smaller quantity at the outset, so that the damage done, if it didn't fit into the better marketplace, the damage done would be minimal. So that the effort on the West Coast would be not a 150,000 barrel effort. That doesn't, I don't visualize that happening. That's tantamount to catastrophe for the seller trying to enter an already crowded marketplace with 150,000 barrels of crude oil a day. But 5,000 or 4,000 or 11,000, depending on this becomes then a function mostly of what inducement could be offered to probably to the independent refiners on the West Coast who might conceivably be able to use a little more or a little less depending on price.
Okay, if there were a spot market in reality existing on the West Coast, why would somebody run it all the way around through the canal?
Well, the relationship between the some 500,000 barrels a day, or perhaps 400,000 barrels a day currently, that can't find a home on the West Coast is completely disproportionate to what I suspect is the spot market. I've said earlier, I don't know what the spot market is. All I know is there is one, and it presumably is quite small, so that there's no, you know, people are trying to find a home for their crude, and a few people are finding a short-term home for a spot sale of crude oil on the West Coast. Those same people next month may have to take a corresponding disproportionate amount through the canal.
So
I don't know the logistics that well, though I hope I don't put myself in the position here of understanding all of how North Slope Crude is moving, because I don't. I'm mystified to a great extent by just what I, from what little I already know.
Right. I'm just trying to separate that which are real possibilities and that which are imaginary or just remotely possible against the realities of today. And from what you said, I get the impression that for Alpetco to attempt to competitively market Mexibuck is not that great. The possibility of them displacing oil on the West Coast, which would in turn require other oil to go through the Panama Canal and back down the wellhead price, is not that great. So while these are possibilities, the probabilities of them happening are somewhat remote.
Perhaps stronger statement than I would state it, but I'd have to agree in large measure. And bear in mind that what I have suggested is not that somehow Alpetco's efforts would be successful in cratering the West Coast market for North Slope Crude. No way.
Okay.
The effects that I visualize would be in pennies per barrel, not in dollars per barrel.
Right. All right, now let's take the other possibilities and assume that the West Coast, that some oil swap comes about, and that the marketing operation on the West Coast is improved. Conceivably, their options there would be a few more. However, it's conceivable at the same time that the price of crude may reestablish at some better value. And Alaska would not adversely suffer if there was an improved market on the West Coast. I think we concluded that it will not adversely suffer as a result of the oil being available to Alpetco. So if the market situation improves, presumably this would not be adverse to the state of Alaska as well.
It would not be adverse to the state of Alaska in the sense of reducing the end value price or the price of the Alpetco crude. It would be adverse to the state viewed in the perspective of, in that improved marketplace, Alaska might have been able to sell its crude for a higher price.
Yes.
In the better market.
Yeah, that goes
in
back.
Other words, the profitability in that sense goes to Alpetco, not to the state. The potential profitability from the increased marketplace becomes something that becomes available to Alpetco, not to the state of Alaska.
Well, but wouldn't that ratchet up the same way as we talked about the other ratcheting down?
It would ratchet up somewhat.
Okay.
Yes.
And that the gap there between even in an improved marketplace is not really significant compared. It's about the same odds I see it as exists now with the glut on the West Coast of trying to depress that market, because all the oil prices are going to go up. The Alaska's price is going to go up if the marketplace is improved, and there will always be some probable finite margin difference. In other words, your spot market might improve.
Well,
to
that extent, I don't quite agree, Senator. But we're not that far apart.
Okay.
I would say that the ratcheting that there would become a wider margin of profit in the case of a substantially improved marketplace, that the margin might be 10 cents higher or 15 cents higher than it would be in the present situation, because I'm going to try and mark
that. Yeah. And of course that makes the assumption that there would be no increase in productivity, and like the California oil that shut in, seems to me like if some oil is swamped or traded, that what that essentially will do is allow more oil to shut in, both in Alaska here and in California, to come onto the marketplace. Okay, taking those comments that we've made, we essentially get to the back part of your comment, which deals primarily with with definitions and concerns that you've listed on page one through on page six, one through four on page seven.
Fine. Senator, may I comment on something before we start to discuss those matters? I said at the outset that these are essentially technical and not. I view them not as of the same importance as the other items.
Are they less important?
They are less important than
the items we've been discussing.
Yes, I think so. Okay. I think so. Now, particularly, I think they're less important in the context that I have read some correspondence from the administration people and the responses to the House's action on the contract, and I perceive that we are not talking about the adjustment of a contract. We are talking about the approval or disapproval.
Right.
I think there's very little in these last pages that would on which an approval or a disapproval would hang one way or the other. If we had the opportunity to say, gee, can we improve this contract a little bit here and there? There are a few things that I think would certainly improve. But in the context of approve or disapprove, no, they're not of that stature.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I don't have any other questions.
This is a question that I've had answered, but I just appreciate Mr. Johnson's viewpoint on it, and that is, it was stated on the House floor that Al Petco could take credit for the purchase price of the oil against its benchmark for spending. Now, Al Petco says they do not view it in this way, and I believe that it's in the letter of intent.
Senator, because it was in the letter of intent, I took it out of my comments. It was there. I was
you
concerned.
Did have that concern.
Yes, I did. I did have that concern. I felt reassured enough by it being in the letter of intent that I read the paragraph in the contract about total project costs, and I was unable to read crude purchase price out of that. You know, I commented in my remarks that I've deleted that it certainly was strained construction to include crude costs in there, but that it certainly could be done by someone who was trying to make a point.
Could you address that on page five, the second paragraph?
No, that's Senator, that's an entirely different thing. What Senator Poland is talking about is the definition of total project costs, which I don't recall the language. I've got a copy of the contract, but it is general language which doesn't really preclude any part of the cost of this project. And certainly a part of the cost of the project could be construed to be the cost of the crude oil that they produce. And at $1 million a day, that's a pretty considerable item. But as I said, I was reassured about this. It was there, and I took it out because they said what they intended, and that seems to me to be a...
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry for the confusion to the committee. I was going to go give a quorum, but I understand they've postponed that meeting until 3:30.
Any additional questions, Mr. Johnson?
No, I'm essentially satisfied with what I'm doing.
If not, Mr. Johnson is going to be meeting in the city to be here for the Monday joint meetings. That will afford all of us an opportunity to get into his presentation and
Yeah, I'll talk to you some more.
Meantime, would it be appropriate for me to further refine this spot market price, develop a little more information on this, because, as I said, it was broad brush, intending to convey a general concept of what can take place. The market changes from day to day.
I would be, Mr. Chairman, I'd be interested in seeing what those factual numbers would be, and in case Alaska decided to and prepare them in such a way that we may offer you an opportunity to sell the oil at whatever price you come up with.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm more thick-headed than usual today with my cold, but I would appreciate if Mr. Johnson would give some thought to discussing with us the amendment that was placed by the House and the rationale behind that and whether or not he feels it's necessary, and that we can take it up at our Monday discussion.
But as I said, he'll be available. He'll use the services of my office for anyone who wishes to consult with him. With that, we'll adjourn. Thank you.
Might well advise him that we're going to charge him a pro rata fee.
For that usage, though.
Good. Oh, good.
No, not him, but I'm talking about other people who want to use his services. Right?
Well, I'll be off on my fishing stuff, so I won't be here.